The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
I'm John Z, reporting for The Pulse on Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. Today on the show, I'm speaking with Marie Babisky and Carl Natrail from the Aboriginal Front Door Society, located at 384 Main Street. This organization provides a culturally safe, peer-designed, and non-judgmental meeting place for Aboriginal people and their friends and family in the downtown Eastside. Together, we discuss how the Aboriginal Front Door Society supports Indigenous people with restoring respect, dignity, and pride back into themselves and their community. We also discuss the food bank program they run that feeds between 400 to 500 people daily, and also how they support Indigenous people in the downtown Eastside with reconnecting to their culture through traditional teachings and ceremony. From there, we talk about how the changing climate and our responses to it, which include how we respond to these heavy rainstorms and heat waves we've been experiencing, can impact people not only living on the street, but also the service providers put in place to support them. All right, can you please introduce yourselves and tell us where you're both from?
I'm Marie Babisky, and I'm from Edmonton, Alberta.
My name is Carl, and I'm a Vancouver, North Vancouver resident. So.
And what do you both do here at Aboriginal Front Door Society?
I am the outreach coordinator, look after different programs and stuff like that. So.
Okay. I do their media and their podcasts, and I help support the team.
Okay. And on your website, I see that the mission statement is listed as you wish to restore respect, dignity, and pride for Indigenous people in the downtown east side of Vancouver. How does the Aboriginal Front Door Society attempt to restore those values back to Indigenous people?
I feel like they restore it back by just being a part of the community and serving the community, but also treating people as people. And, you know, not what they're going through in life.
I would, in general, concur with that. You know, we try to make sure that our team out there is as welcoming as possible, regardless of how they may look or sound or anything else like that, and make sure that everybody that comes through is treated with respect, not only from ourselves, but from the people around them, so that everybody can feel safe when they come to our doors and, you know, get what they need to get. So.
Right. And when they come through the doors here, what is it that they get access to?
At the moment, we're trying to reinstitute our different programs, Women's Circle, Men's Circle, Elder Circle, Youth Circle. But we had to shut them down due to COVID. So we're just kind of trying to, you know, institute a lot of the safeguards and those kinds of measures as put down by the province so that we can help get those programs up and running again. But at the moment, we have like a food service that has really taken right off. And, you know, we have from the homeless to the working poor to the working, you know, because they live in this community. Regardless of where they are in their life, they know they can come here safely to get a cup of coffee, a sandwich, you know, that kind of stuff. So, you know, that's really taken off over the summer months and stuff like that. We've increased our numbers from like maybe 100 to 200 a day to on a day like today, we'll probably be serving like 400 to 500 people. So it's just like escalated, like really.
Yeah, and your food program's unique because it's not just, you're not just coming here to get a bowl of soup, right? You're also connecting people with resources and other connections that they might not otherwise have access to, right? So it's actually like a place where people can get together and share and collaborate with each other.
Yes, yes. And we do like cultural days where we'll have some of our traditional singers out there. We do some general community events like at the end of the week, we're doing like a November birthday celebration. So everybody that had birthdays in November, we're going to be, you know, handing out cake and singing songs and whatever, right? Yeah. So just, you know, trying to build that whole community sense of feel around, out here so that people can celebrate everything that everyone else does.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
I think at this point, we've kind of become a family. Like, everyone who's on this block, the ones who sleep down here every night, they look forward to seeing us in the morning, and we look forward to seeing them, you know? So we actually know people by name, and not just by, like, oh, I know you sleep there, you know? So it's become, we've kind of built, like, a family on this block. So it helps people feel more welcomed.
And when I came in, actually, they offered me coffee and orange slices when I came in as well. But how often does the food bank program run? Is it a weekly thing?
Every day.
It's every day?
Every day.
Okay, wow. That's really great. That's doing some great things, and it's obviously growing and escalating. It's obviously supplying a need, like you said, like, it's growing in numbers, right? So, yeah, that's great. Is there any, like, Christmas traditions that you guys have coming up, we're nearing the holiday season?
Well, we do hampers. We usually order about 40 to 50 hampers, and then we find families in the East Van area to give the hampers to, so that we can help them, like, ease the stress of Christmas. One of the biggest things is to show the community that we're not only Maine and Hastings, we are the community too. So we try to make sure that everybody's accommodated.
Right. And when you say, like, we are more than Maine and Hastings, where would you say that stretches around to?
I'd say all Vancouver, but mostly we're East Van.
Yeah, so. Sure. And the Downtown East Side, unfortunately, has a long history of marginalization, poverty, drug addiction, and stigmatization. And I was reading that it stretches back to the 80s, even, when the city conducted mass evictions of residents during Expo 86, when they tried to gentrify this neighborhood. I'm curious, in your opinions, how have you seen the Downtown East Side change and evolve over the years, either for better or for worse? And what differences, if any, do you see the community here now as opposed to 5 years ago or so?
Well, I think the support's in the community. There's a lot more support places coming up, and there's a lot more people that are getting supported coming out of that lifestyle. So as being a street kid and having an experience in my teenage years here down on Hastings, I never thought that I would be in the position I am. And, you know, it's kind of like I was kind of always told that I was always going to be on the streets and stuff. But I had the opportunity to go back to school, and I had the support of Aboriginal Front Door, which led me into my career and turning into a business owner and everything else. So it's been, if I could do that, then anyone can. Like, the support systems are so strong here in East Van that they actually really change lives.
And Carl, in your opinion, how do you think the Downtown East Side has changed for better or worse over the last couple of years?
That's an interesting question, because, I mean, I think there's a whole plethora of events and influences that have come in. The first and foremost, of course, is just the population explosion. Like, when I first moved into Vancouver almost 30 years ago now, the population just wasn't, not like it was today. I mean, we're talking probably 600, maybe 700,000 people. Now, just in the city of Vancouver, you're like over almost triple that, right? But so there's that, you know. And then the closing down of Riverview, so, you know, the major in-house mental health support. They had a lot of assisted living. Like, I even used to take one of my aunties. She would live there during the week, and then I'd bring her home for the weekends. So there was a lot of situations like that as well, especially in, for people that lived in the Downtown East Side, or, you know, the Aboriginal communities. So once that closed down, of course, you know, that support system was not replaced as promised, right? So you cross that with the population explosion, and then, you know, some of the world events that bring, you know, more immigrants into Canada, and, you know, like, all of these major events, whether they be world events or Canadian events or just Vancouver events, such as Expo 86, and then even with the last Olympics, right? The first announcement that I remember hearing, I was living out by Hastings and Slocan at that time, and was thinking of moving to an apartment. So that's the reason why I paid attention. So that, as that came through, a lot of people say, well, we'll be temporarily raising the rents for the Olympics. But rest assured that as soon as the Olympics leave, we'll drop the rents back down. That never happened. Right? So you're talking about a lot of working poor that suddenly were homeless or very close to it, right? So you got like again, the gentrification of the whole area and that kind of stuff, like all of these kinds of events. But at the same time, you know, like the
Carnegie Hall, it's really across the street from you guys.
Yeah, so like it's really stepped up, you know, because they're working out of two or three different locations now. And the Aboriginal Front Door has been here all the time. You know, we have like brother organizations such as Smoke Signals, which has been integrated. And, you know, a few years back, we began working with a community policing center more closely. The relationship was always there, but it just seems like, you know, we're pulling together more. And so we're able to bring resources together quicker, faster. And then, of course, during COVID, you know, like a lot of places had to close their doors. And now that the end is nigh for the pandemic, right? Like a lot of other places are now closing their food services. But we're thinking of expanding ours. So we're going to be getting like a food truck that we can park out there. And there's some other agencies out there, such as like Atira and a bunch of others that are beginning to ramp up and kind of integrate into like a full system to be able to start supporting the downtown Eastside residents a little bit better. And it's just not limited to the Aboriginal people, which is nice, because you know that's the kind of integration we were looking for back in the 80s. Right, so it's really nice to be able to actually kind of see that. So are things worse? Yes. Are things better? Yes.
Yeah.
Right. It's always just going to be this kind of continual cycle.
Right. And I'm curious, how do issues for people in the downtown east side change or shift as we change with weather and seasons, right? We're moving into the fall, we're moving into the winter. We just had like a freak rainstorm. How do you see, as you're right here at the crossroads of it, right? You're at Main and Hastings. You're interacting with people that are street entrenched. Like, what does these changes in weather patterns, how does that impact the people down here?
Impact the people on the streets?
Yes.
We've taken on COVID kits now. So now we have like a kit that's designed to help when seasons get really cold and stuff. There's enough stuff in there that could help them live through the night. I don't know, the seasons change, it's always really bothered me because it gets so cold so fast and I worry about the people who are out there, you know, freezing to death. When it gets cold, I just get as much stuff out into the streets as I can.
Yeah.
And that's been my biggest job, is just moving stuff to get everybody.
And is there like, this might be an obvious question, but is there like an increase in demand for services and supports when the weather changes?
I would say so. And I think, you know, that the seriousness of the events, the heaviness of the events, such as the recent flooding and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Heat waves in the summer too, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? All of it, you know, can be taxing on a lot of the different kinds of systems. Like, for the COVID, we saw people mass buying everything out, which makes it a little bit harder for us when we're just trying to serve the common person that comes to our door. You know, with the heat waves, again, there was like a mass buying from all these people, and they were stockpiling and everything else. I think with this current event, you know, like they've limited like fuel, they've limited buying capacity for different peoples. So we're getting the institution or the sort of systems to be able to institute better ways to make sure that everybody gets what they need, which is nice. And I think some of the other major agencies are now learning how to stockpile a little bit so that at least the lower mainland isn't scrambling. Because I know some of my family, like let's say near Kamloops, you know, they're kind of the working poor. So, you know, they're always kind of like one paycheck away from being homeless. In their specific community, I had heard that there was like a mass riot at the Walmart where people were just like taking everything they could off the shelves, right? I mean, that was a little surprising, but we did not see that here actually in the Lower Mainland. So I think with all of our major distributors, you know, they figured out better logistics so we can at least survive a little bit, which is nice, because then when we're looking at what we need to be able to serve the people that come to the door, the resources are there.
Yes, right.
But it definitely does have to be geared, because like in for the fires and the heat waves, we needed more water, and even the heat blankets, they, if you flip them over, it's kind of heat reducing, yeah. Right?
Expels the heat wave.
Yeah, right. Because we're not able to actually accept a lot of people inside our building right now, we're looking at those kinds of things and trying to plan quarterly to say, like, okay, what's likely to happen.
Right. And we have to plan for these natural disasters now, right?
Right? Yeah. Yeah. So we've already been planning to do like a winter package for a lot of the street people. So that'll include like, you know, like a toque, a hoodie, winter blanket, socks, sweaters, those little hand warmer thingies, right?
Mittens.
Yeah.
Or no, hand warmer things. I know what you're What am I, six? Like... Okay, I just, yes, I know what you're talking about, though.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, what are some of the examples, or kind of switching gears here, what are some of the examples of the Aboriginal cultural teachings that you teach and support people with here? I was reading on your website that you're able to reintroduce people to cultural teachings and ceremonies. I'm just kind of wondering if you could touch on that a little bit.
So, like, here at our door, a lot of times, sometimes we'll get someone to learn how to introduce themselves to the community, because we have a very specific way of being able to do that. It's not quite universal, but it's mostly universal. So to give an example of that is, like, you start with your oldest living or your oldest relatives that you know. So if you know your great-grandparents, you start from there. Then you go to your grandparents and then your parents and then you as the last. And that's just a way of, like, acknowledging all those that have gone before you. And then a lot of times we will have different medicines available at the front door. So whether someone wants to, like, use sage to smudge themselves and clean their mind and the spirit, or, like, sweetgrass so that they can get more in tune with their spirit, or, you know, we've been looking at instituting even the cedar, which kind of does a lot of that same kind of thing and is more specifically West Coast. Like, the gentleman that just kind of walking down the stairs there, he's kind of our oldest person that helps teach a lot of the way the old people used to live. Now he is specialized in the fact that he knows about his people. But the interesting thing is that he's been in the Vancouver area in the downtown east side a lot, so that he's even been teaching me about my family. So even though he comes from a different area, he's been around long enough. Oh yeah, did you ever know so-and-so? And I'm like, hey, wait a minute, that was my great uncle. Right, so then he's teaching me about my great uncle and how he did things and what he shared with him and all that kind of stuff, right? So
yeah, I think it's really important to cut you off, but I think it's really important to have places like that existing, especially in an area that's like the downtown east side, where people are disconnected from family or disconnected from tradition, right? You know, and having a place like the Aboriginal Front Door Society where they can come back in and get reconnected with ceremony, with teachings, with culture, that must feel really rewarding, being able to provide that for somebody, be able to connect them again with something that they might have not been in touch with for a very long time, or maybe never at all, and this is the first time they're being introduced to this, right? You know, so as workers within that must be a really rewarding experience, I'd imagine.
It is, and I mean, specifically, I do try to work with a lot of the Aboriginals, but I've equally learned just as much as the South American. I still call them Aboriginal because they have that kind of blood, but they're not recognized by the Canadian government that way. But I've also equally learned about the Asians. Like, we have a large Chinese population that comes in speaking Mandarin or Cantonese or, you know, whatever. And, you know, like, one of them was teaching me what their grandparent told them about the lunar calendar. And they hadn't thought about that in, like, 40 years. So it's not just the Aboriginal population that is able to kind of come and, you know, share culture and learn or remember that. It's pretty rewarding no matter which way it comes.
So if I understand you correctly, there's other people of other cultures coming in into the space here and sharing their cultural traditions with each other.
And they also really love the drumming, because I mean, if you go back far enough in any culture, there's always a drum.
It's the heartbeat.
Yeah, right. So like the last time when we did our birthday celebrations, I noted that there was like six different nations just standing around the drum enjoying it, right? And so it was kind of cool.
I love powwow music. I listen to it just on my Spotify even. So just kind of wrapping up here, I'm curious, what's something about the Downtown East Side that gets missed on people who are not down here at all? Something that's special or unique about this part of the city that goes unreported or unrecognized by people that are outside of this community?
There's a lot of outsiders in our community who are helping, you know, and I don't think that a lot of, like, the outsiders realize that, you know. I know a lot of people who are, like, from West Van, South Van, who come down here to work. So I think that's, you know, something that needs to be known.
Okay.
Like, I actually know a lady, I met this lady in North Vancouver, and she doesn't look like the type you would think who'd be down here. Very posh, you know, very held together and well-spoken and educated. But she works down at one of the women's centers, and she's like, I love it down here. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I get it.
In some ways, like, I would never want to see any of the organizations here move on. But if they could expand, because, like, we have people that come from the far side of Burnaby just because they like who they see at the door. And they say there's nothing like it in Burnaby, or, you know, sometimes from Richmond, or, you know, South Vancouver. Definitely we have nothing like this in North Vancouver. The Squamish Nation's pretty good at providing some things, but even when you're involved, it doesn't quite feel like that community as it does down here. Is one of the other aspects I think that Marie was talking about is the fact that once you are down here, regardless of who you are, where you come from, or how you're living, you're accepted. And that's something that I hear over and over and over again about people that come down here or wind up down here, is the fact, like, they say, I can be who I want to be, and nobody judges me for it. Come here, I am who I am, and I can get what I need.
Yeah. It's as real as it gets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is great. It's very genuine down here, for sure. Is there anything that I neglected to touch on that you wanted to maybe promote about the Aboriginal Front Door Society? Anything coming up or events or anything that I maybe neglected to mention?
We do have a lot of programs that will be coming up, and a lot of them will be geared around sharing culture to different organizations and the community. But they're still in the works, because we got to work around the whole COVID thing, and, you know, like, different offices have different mandates. Like, certain offices will say, well, we only allow 8 people in at a time, or something like that, right? So we got to kind of come up with some systems that we can allow our programs to kind of get out there and flourish, despite everything else that is going on, so.
Yeah.
We also will be starting up our podcast again, and we will be doing interviews with people, like local artists, you know, people who are in the East Van area. So that I'm excited for.
That's fine. Okay, great. So this was something that you were doing previously, and it's on a hiatus at the moment? Or?
Yeah, no, we did it previously. Just right now, just through the holidays and COVID and everything, we're trying to make sure that we're ready to do it, and it starts off, like, on a good start. So, you know, just basically waiting for the whole COVID to calm down and, yeah.
Well, hopefully we're on the other side of that. Hopefully soon we can start to get to do these things. And it's been great having this opportunity to meet with you both and to learn more about your organization. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Once again, that was Marie Babisky and Carl Natrail from the Aboriginal Front Door Society. To learn more about the Aboriginal Front Door Society, visit abfrontdoor.org. That's abfrontdoor.org. I'm John Z, and you've been listening to The Pulse on CFRO Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, Vancouver.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.